with the latest from the world of technology. This is the Tech Guide Podcast with Stephen Fenech.
Let's jump straight in.
Tech Guide.
This was a real effort to push into that growing consumer space, very competitive space in Australia.
Tech Guide.
It does give the user plenty of options, whether you're working or viewing content on the device.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is the Tech Guide Podcast.
Knowing Apple, you just don't know what to expect.
Tech Guide.
They've gone from taking an excellent device and they've made it even better. It's had a redesign inside and out.
Now, from the studios of techguide.com.au, Stephen Fenech.
Hello and welcome to Tech Guide episode 138, the podcast that will keep you updated and educated about the latest consumer technology. Thanks for listening and thanks for downloading. And if you're joining us for the first time, welcome aboard. I'm Stephen Fenech and I'm the editor of techguide.com.au. On this week's show, all of the details about the Apple Watch, they've just been revealed and we'll tell you everything you need to know, including pricing and when they'll officially go on sale. In the Tech Guide reviews, we take a look at the LG Music Flow multi-room speakers, the Power Cube that's reinvented the Power Board, and the Moshi iLynx USB 3.0 hub. In the Tech Guide interview, we have an interesting chat with Paul Lin from Empirical Works about the direction of the apps market and their development. And we'll wrap things up with the Tech Guide Help Desk. And it's all brought to you by Netgear, Australia's number one brand of home Wi-Fi products. Lots to talk about, so let's get cracking. Well, Apple has just announced the pricing and release date for Apple Watch. Tim Cook got up on stage in San Francisco for the Spring Forward event, which we all knew was all about the Apple Watch. And he provided some details that we were waiting on regarding the Apple Watch. And obviously, the most important thing was the date. It's going to be released in Australia on April the 24th. With a pre-order date of April 10. Now, Australia is amongst the top tier of countries that will receive the watch, so be among the first countries. And because of the time difference, Australia will actually be the first place in the world where it will go on sale. Now, pricing, they're not going to be cheap. The Apple Watch will start at $499 for the Apple Watch Sport. That's the 38mm model. There's two. There's a 38mm and a 42mm version. $579 for that 42mm Apple Watch Sport version, available in anodized aluminium, silver or space grey. Moving up to the Apple Watch, which is made of stainless steel, it will start at $799 for the 38mm, $879 for the 42mm, and it moves all the way up to $1,629. Now, price is affected by the type of band that you choose. Obviously, not all bands are the same. The sport band is the cheapest. I think it's $79. There are other bands like there's a milled steel band that is $229. There's also a modern buckle magnetic band as well. The Milanese loop is the stainless steel. That's $229. There's a leather loop. There's also the modern buckle magnetic $379 and $679 for the Link bracelet. But hold on to your hats if you're after the 18-carat yellow or rose gold version of Apple Watch, then you're up for $14,000 for the 38mm version and an extra $3,000 at $17,040 for the 42mm version, which is for the money is no object customers out there. That was really surprising how expensive those models were going to be, and Apple naturally announced that those versions will be available at select retailers. Well, we're thinking high-end jewelry stores and watchmakers, but across the board, I think the information that was given out about Apple Watch in terms of the demonstration of the features was very impressive. They did go through a live demonstration which showed that you can receive your messages, your emails, phone calls. You can even use it to pay for things using Apple Pay. And Apple Pay itself has been adopted quite widely across the US and will be hitting Australia soon. And Apple Watch will allow you to use Apple Pay to pay for things at the terminal. They also did a demo to show that Apple Watch can be used as a boarding pass. There's also hotel chains in the US which will allow the Apple Watch to even be your room key. So you simply wave your watch over the lock and it will open your room as well, which is really impressive. On the app side, some very popular apps, no doubt, will be accessible from that launch date. And we're talking apps, very popular apps like Instagram, Twitter, WeChat, Uber, Nike Plus Running, Shazam, amongst a host of others. Don't forget that Apple released the development kit back in November to allow developers to get a head start with their apps. Other features that were demonstrated was digital touch, which connects two Apple Watches directly. So you can send a touch and the connected watch could receive that touch to get their attention. You can send sketches. You can even send your heartbeat, which is really romantic. So there's messages. You can use Siri to dictate messages or record messages to send along. No keyboard on the screen. So you're going to have to type out. There's no way to type out your message or your reply. So you're going to have to use Siri or go back to the phone. Speaking of the phone, you need iPhone 5 and up to connect to the Apple Watch. There will be an app that's installed with the 8.2 version of iOS that'll include an Apple Watch app to help you sync the Apple Watch to your phone, as well as access the apps that you can load on Apple Watch as well. So Apple Watch coming to Australia April the 24th, pre-order starting on April the 10th, and prices starting at $499. Now, that wasn't the only product that Apple announced. Before they unveiled the Apple Watch launch date, they also showed off a brand new 12-inch MacBook with Retina display. Now, this is a MacBook that sits in its own family. It's not a MacBook Air. It's not a MacBook Pro. This is its own MacBook. It's 12 inches, Retina display screen. It's got a screen resolution of 2304 by 1440 with a 16:10 aspect ratio. It's got an all-new keyboard. The keyboard goes edge to edge, and it also has been reinvented with a brand-new mechanism. So under the keys, it's now a lot thinner. The keys themselves are 17% larger and more accurate. That mechanism, even when you hit the key on the side, it actually the responsiveness is improved and accuracy is improved. Now, this thing is thin and light. It's just 13.1 millimeters at its thickest point and weighs only 920 grams. There's a picture on my story on Tech Guide comparing the MacBook, the new MacBook, with the MacBook Air. It's actually 3.2 millimeters thinner than the MacBook Air, if you can believe that. There's also a picture of the new butterfly mechanism beneath the keys that made it 34% thinner to fit into that absolutely thin chassis. Another thing that's been included is a new Force Touch trackpad, and this can actually detect different pressures of touch on the trackpad. So that allows you to highlight text, control media files, and do a lot of these other things depending on how hard you press the trackpad, which is really interesting. There's also a new battery design. Battery's always been a concern just on the Apple Watch. Actually, I forgot to mention, they have claimed the Apple Watch battery will last a day, so 18 hours before it needs a charge. But on this new MacBook, the 12-inch MacBook, they've actually reinvented the battery to fit into this unibody. It's got what they've called a terraced design, which means that it is layered in terraces so that it fits the space inside the unibody more completely. Rather than having a standard rectangular battery that doesn't fill all the spaces, this new terrace battery fits every nook and cranny. The result is a 35% bigger battery cell that will give you all day usage. That's more than 10 hours. The MacBook 2, the 12-inch MacBook, like the phone, it will be available in three colors: space gray, gold, and silver. These go on sale April the 10th, so they'll start at $1,799, and the secondary model will be $2,199 with added RAM and more flash memory. They've got the new dual-core processors from Intel on board, the Intel M processor, I should say, and that is with turbo boost speeds, 2.4 gigahertz on the entry-level model and up to 2.6 gigahertz on the next model up. So exciting times there. We're going to see the Apple Watch on April the 24th, new Apple 12-inch MacBook on April the 10th, April 24th for Apple Watch, April 10th for the 12-inch MacBook, and as I said, it sits in its own family. It's not a MacBook Air. It's not a MacBook Pro. It's just a MacBook. 12 inches, Retina display. The event also had other news of the Apple TV actually reduced in price in the US. Not sure if that's going to happen here in Australia. And they also revealed new health research apps that will turn your iPhone into a device that can give all kinds of feedback for research purposes to help in research of diseases like asthma, breast cancer, Parkinson's disease, things like that. So everyone with an iPhone can potentially contribute to the research that goes into early detection and possible cure of these terrible diseases. Apple have done it again. They got everybody's attention. They got everyone out of bed very early too. The event started at 4 a.m. Sydney time, and it was about an hour and a half the event ran for, and some exciting announcements as a result of it. So if you want to read more about the new Apple Watch pricing list, the list of accessories, the launch date, you can also read about the new 12-inch MacBook Pro as well with Retina display. You can do that at techguide.com.au.
This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
Tech Guide,
keeping you updated and educated.
The Tech Guide podcast is proudly sponsored by Netgear, Australia's number one Wi-Fi brand. And in today's connected homes, there's a variety of network devices using a wired connection for fast gaming, streaming entertainment, or storage backup. With connected TVs and media streamers, gaming consoles, and multiple computers, a switch is required to separate and prioritize the traffic. And what you can end up with, though, is a jumble of cords in your home theater setup or in your home office. It resembles a rat's nest. But the new Netgear Click Switch is a gigabit Ethernet switch designed to improve cable management and reduce those unsightly cords and put those ports exactly where you want them. It's slim design, it's got an internal power supply, and it's got a unique 1-2-3-4 click mounting system with either vertical or horizontal orientations so you can have optimal placement where other switches won't go. So check out that new industry-first click switch from Netgear at www.netgear.com.au/click switch.
Tech Guide.
Now, a Tech Guide review with Stephen Fenwick. Tech Guide.
Kicking off the Tech Guide reviews this week, we're going to talk about the LG Music Flow series of speakers. Now, these are multi-room speakers. This is a very big part of the market right now. Multi-room audio is as popular as ever. It's more popular than ever before. There's plenty of companies that are already playing in this space. Of course, everyone refers back to Sonos. Sonos was one of the first companies that really, they kind of not invented multi-room audio, but really made it easier through Wi-Fi connectivity, through a really great app, and being able to connect not only to stream all of your own music, but also all your streamed services as well. Well, LG's come along. They've been around for a little while, and a long time, as a matter of fact, and they've created some great products. Even in the audio space, they've got some decent credentials in that area, and they've come along with Music Flow. Now, this is a series of speakers that combine to create a multi-room audio system. Now, there is the H3, the H5, and the H7. And of course, as you go up in those numbers, the speakers are bigger, with more power out, with more power, and obviously in more expensive as well as you move up those numbers. There's also in the range the HS6 soundbar, so that can be all connected in this Music Flow story. Now, you can buy one of these speakers, you can buy 10 of these speakers. It's up to you how you want to set up your system. That's the beauty of Music Flow, is that you can add to it as you go, whether it's because of your budget allowing that, or just the needs. You know, you want someone else to be able to listen to music in their own part of the home, so you can add to this system as you go. Now, the basis of this system, of course, you need a wireless network and you need a smartphone or a tablet so you can install the free Music Flow app, which will then allow you to set up the speakers and manage them, direct the music where you want to go, all through that app. Now, the H3 is the at the bottom of the speaker tree here in the Music Flow story. It's $249. It's about 12.5 centimeters wide, so it's the smaller speaker to choose from. It's ideal for smaller rooms, obviously like a bedroom or a kitchen or an office. So it is, despite its size, delivers decent sound, though. In my review, you can see I have tested them out in my home. Moving up to the H5, that's $399. The H3 was $249, by the way. H5 is twice the size now of the H3. It's 34 centimeters wide. It's got obviously bigger speakers and more output. It's got 30 watt output. So the H3's got 30 watt output. You get 40 watt output with the H5. That's $399. Moving up to the H7, you get 70 watt output, and that's $549. That's 37 centimeters wide. So you can see you're moving up in size and in price and in power. So obviously the larger speakers are designed for larger rooms, like a lounge room, or the H7 is obviously designed for an open plan, open living area, because at full volume, it can easily cover that space. And the beauty is that even at that high volume, you're not getting a lot of distortion as well. Audio quality-wise, these speakers really stand up. They sound pretty good. But what I like about the whole setup is the app, the Music Flow app, which is available for Android and for iPhone as well, for iOS. And it is the way you set up the speakers. I should point out, though, you do need, if you're going to have more than one speaker, and if you're setting up multi-room audio, of course you do, you'll need to buy the LG wireless bridge as well. This is a small device that connects directly to your router and creates a mesh network in conjunction with your existing dual-band Wi-Fi network as well. So what it means is that it's easier to manage multiple speakers on your network. And by that I mean directing music to the speakers, directing different music to different speakers, and also directing the same music to all the speakers. So having this bridge, it's an additional $79, but worth the investment just to make this network even stronger and even more reliable, more solid to use when you've got all of these speakers running at the same time. And of course, you can rename the speakers so you can easily identify the speaker. Obviously, you can identify it by room. So you may have one called bedroom, you may have one called kitchen, you may have one called lounge room, or, you know, what if you want to put names on them? It's up to you, but they're very easy to identify. So through the app, after your setup is done, and it's a step-by-step process, it just does step you through it quite easily. Then you can get down to listening to your music, whether it's music on your device, so whether it's your own collection, or through your stream services, and I'm talking services like Spotify, TuneIn, Deezer. They're the only ones available at the moment, but there will be more down the track. So you can stream your music. You can you can either play your own off your device, stream it through those services. And what I like about these speakers too, or I should mention, is they've all got Bluetooth connectivity as well. Now, why is that important? I think it's a handy added feature because you don't necessarily need to use Wi-Fi all the time. You may just want to just stream to one. You might be in the same room as this speaker within Bluetooth range. You may just want to stream your music to that speaker that's right in front of you. You may have a guest, a friend over that wants to play you some songs. Then they could easily connect to Bluetooth without having to go through the rigmarole of getting them on your Wi-Fi network, passwords and all of that. So it is a great additional feature if you wanted to just use that instead of going Wi-Fi. Now, the speakers can be grouped together. It's possible to create stereo pairs, so you can have the two speakers. Say you've got two H3s in one room, you can set them up as a left and right pair. Same thing for the H5s and the H7s. If you've got the soundbar, you can also use home cinema mode. So you can set up the soundbars obviously at the front of the room underneath the TV, and the rear speakers then could be a pair of H3s, a pair of H5s, a pair of H7s, whatever you happen to have. They become then your rear speakers in that home cinema mode. So they're quite versatile. The app, as I mentioned, is really easy to use. It does make it simple to play, to direct your music just to one speaker. To, if there may be multiple users in the home, you can direct your own music to your own speaker. And if you're having a party, you can direct the same music to all the speakers. The whole house can be playing the same music. So that's the LG Music Flow setup. Those prices really quickly once again. The wireless bridge, $79. H3 speaker, $249. H5, $399. H7, $549. And that soundbar, the HS6 soundbar, also comes with a wireless subwoofer as well. That's $799. So you can just see you can group two, three of these speakers for a relatively small investment. I think these are cheaper than the Sonos setup. It's really up to the individual to decide whether they sound better. Personally, I think they sound as good as Sonos speakers. Sonos speakers are a bit more expensive. They do seem to be the speakers that they are the go-to speakers for people looking for speakers of this kind, the multi-room audio speakers. But the LG Music Flow speakers definitely hold their own and are definitely worth a listen. So if you want to read more about that review, you can find it at techguide.com.au.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is Tech Guide with Stephen Finney.
Tech Guide.
Our next review is a product called the Power Cube. And I have to say, when I posted this review late last week, it went nuts. A lot of people were looking at this and it kind of solved a problem for a lot of people. I think that's a sign of a good product that can solve a problem with an existing product. Like the Power Board, for example, the Power Cube is what I've called a reinvention of the Power Board. Now, a Power Board, as we know, is a long, flat device that has multiple plugs, so you can connect multiple devices from one PowerPoint. So that's all well and good, and they're all we've seen them. They've been around for years. Nothing really's changed, but there are some drawbacks with that. Like my biggest gripe with a flat power board is when you get a large plug in one of the sockets, and it's so big, like it's one of those power supply / plugs. So you know, it's quite big. The plug itself may be even at an angle. It goes across the plug. It's wide, and what normally happens is it takes up room. You can't plug anything right next to it, so that next socket is wasted because of this fat plug that's taken up all the room. Now, the Power Cube, as its name suggests, is a cube. There are two versions, one with five sockets, one with four and two USBs. The one I've reviewed on Tech Guide is the USB version. Now, what it is, it puts all of the stuff you'd find on a normal, say four-socket power board, into a cube that's about the size of a Rubik's Cube. In fact, I've photographed my Rubik's Cube next to the Power Cube, and the Power Cube is only slightly larger. Now, the advantage of having all those different plugs on each side of the cube, the problem of having too fat a plug is now solved because it's not going to get in the way of the other plug because the other plug's on the other side, on the other face of the cube. So that problem has now been solved. It's much smaller as well than a power board, obviously. And there is also a mounting system that lets you position the Power Cube under a desk, for example. The downside of that is that you lose a plug because the mounting bracket actually clips in to a face that's got a socket in it. So if you've got the four plug version, you're going to lose a plug if you want to use that mount. It's going to come down to three, but you still got your two USB chargers as well. Obviously, if you've got the five, then it comes down to four, but it is a very handy way to plug the Power Cube to attach it under a desk, so it keeps the cables off the floor. It's very neat and tidy and easy to manage. There is surge protection built in. It's got a reset switch in case it does go off. And there is the four socket plus USB, extended USB, as well as a normal five plug version, available in a variety of colors. And it's affordable too. It's only $29.95. It's available now from Officeworks and Dick Smith. If you want to check it out and take a look at that photo of the Rubik's Cube next to the Power Cube and read my full review, you can find that at techguide.com.au. Next up, we're going to talk Moshi. Now, Moshi is a company that's made plenty of great accessories for mobiles and computers and all sorts of products. They make a lot of Mac-centric products too, but the Moshi iLynx 3.0 can be used not only with a Mac but also with a PC. Now, this is a USB 3.0 hub. There are four of them on aboard the Moshi iLynx. And they can connect to your PC or your Mac through a single cable. So you give up one USB port and gain four with this. There's a slight angle as well. So the base has a slight angle so that the ports are actually aiming upwards. So very easy to connect your devices. Now, speaking of your devices, you can connect four of them at the same time. They're USB 3 ports, don't forget. So faster data transfer speeds, faster syncing data transfer speeds of up to 5 gigabits per second. So that's pretty quick. But not only are these ports available to sync your devices, they can also charge them as well. So there is a power supply that comes with the Moshi iLynx, so that you can use it actually without the power supply and just draw power from the computer, but that's all great when the computer's on. When you connect the power to, you've got the power supply of the iLynx, its own power supply, it can then be used as a headless USB port, let's say, and then you can still charge your devices when the computer is turned off, the PC or Mac is off. So you can still get that done, 5 watts of power through each of the USB ports. The one on the far right, though, has up to 10 watts of output, so that means you can charge up tablets as well. Now, the handy thing about this, too, is that it's not only good on your desktop, it's also good on your travels. It's small enough, like it's about the size, it's slightly smaller than a phone, about the size of a deck of cards. So it is small enough to take with you on your travels. So if you need a portable charger when you're away, say in your hotel room, rather than having all your different adapters, you can just take this, the Moshi iLynx USB hub, and there are four USB ports that can charge your phone, your tablets, your e-readers, your wearables, all these USB-powered devices right there. And because it's got a power supply, you don't even have to connect it to the computer for you to use it as a charger. It can just be connected directly to the PowerPoint, and you'll be able to charge up everything on the fly. The Moshi iLynx is available right now through JB Hi-Fi, and it's priced at $99.99. And if you want to take a closer look and read my review, it's you know where to find it, techguide.com.au.
Tech Guide. Now, a Tech Guide interview.
Tech Guide.
Our interview this week is with Paul Lin, who's the CEO of Empirical Works. Now, this is an app development company. They make apps, iOS apps, Android apps, but not just any old apps. They make apps for companies, whether it's Coca-Cola or energy companies. And so they've had quite a vision with their app creation. They've been around for a long time. They've seen where the app market's going. The app market is still relatively young when you think about it. And Paul has led the team over there with their app development. The company, as I mentioned, create apps for different firms, different businesses, different uses, whether it's for public use or private use. There's a lot of apps that he'll talk about that are used for internal purposes only. There may be an app to reduce the amount of paperwork that's done, for example, for a company. So Empirical Works, Paul and his team, they normally discuss with that company what they their requirements and then come up with a solution through an app. It's a really interesting chat we had with Paul about apps and where they're going. And here's what he had to say. Well, hi, Paul. Thanks for joining us on Tech Guide. And now tell us a little bit about what you're doing here at Empirical Works.
Okay, so we build apps for businesses, but it's usually the mobile thinking and the solution around the app that we do. So if you look at it, we do work for big guys like Endeavor Energy and Boral, so construction energy guys that are looking to optimize the internal business process, that type of app, more than the gaming and marketing fun stuff.
So the app market really has come a long way in such a short time. It's hard to believe it's only been 2008 when sort of the app store opened with Apple and then, of course, Google Play Store. Like what changes have you seen over the years? Must have been huge changes.
Oh, wow, yeah. A lot of changes. Like you said, I can't remember a day when we didn't have apps. But I've really literally been there from the start where at the start it was all startups. and fun little games and things like that. People build them for themselves for fun. Eventually, that became a lot more marketing related. So, you know, companies like Coke, KFC started doing them for publicity, engagement type of apps. It's only now, though, after about, you know, 5-6 years, that businesses are starting to realize there's a lot of potential in what they can do with it internally to actually make some money out of it rather than just a cool gimmick sales tool.
So are we moving away from, you know, the whole thing a few years ago was, oh, you've got to have a website. Every business needs to have a website. Now, apart from having a website, would it be fair to say that now you need an app as well?
Yeah, I think so. It's but it's not so much consumer-facing apps. A lot of businesses don't have a clear consumer-facing side to them. For example, construction companies. You know, they're building buildings. You don't need something cool. But they do need things like how do we fill out safety forms? How do we optimize our process, reduce paperwork? That type of thing. So yes, every business.
So it's more an internal. So it helps a company get things done internally within the company. So it's not something that necessarily you'll download on the App Store.
Yeah.
But something that they can use within their own confines of the company.
Yeah, I mean, a good comparison I usually think about is the parallel between this and the web industry from about 2000. So if you remember, long time ago when websites first came out, it was. You know, all these flashy stuff that with the banners and things, but it was mostly individual websites when people just put up their own stuff. Eventually, that became little stores. So you would have your local hardware store would have a web page. But these days, for businesses, most of the web technology they use is in their CRMs or their database. Very internal, very big, gigantic projects that has nothing to do with the consumer-facing side of things. And I think apps are in the same space right now. It's kind of moving from the consumer space into the internal business space.
Okay. And so a company like Empirical Works comes along and a company ABC comes along and talks to you and says, look, we need the app to do this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. And then you go away. And then what's the process?
I think it's a little bit higher level than that at this point because it's still new enough that they have the business goal and they understand mobility. They don't understand even what app they want. So we find that these big companies, they don't come to us asking for a specific app even. They want to know how many apps they need and what kind of apps they need to solve their business problem. Right. So again, it starts off with their business thinking. Us explaining to them, okay, for your business, you want to say, for example, paperwork. How do you go about doing that with mobile technology?
Mm-hmm. So of course you need to be familiar across all kinds of mobile devices, tablets, smartphones, laptops. Or mainly tablets and smartphones, I'm assuming, with apps, is that right? So you need to really stay on the cutting edge yourself in terms of tech and what's out there to help these companies.
Yeah, that's exactly. It's more about understanding the overall space or mobility and enterprise mobility specifically rather than little features or the cool new apps out there.
Yeah. I do get a lot of people saying, look, I've got a great idea for an app. and it is become like that where people think, oh, this is something I could really explore. They see all these stories about apps making millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. So what's your advice to someone who, just an average consumer who thinks of an app, mm-hmm. you being pretty an expert in this field, what's your advice to someone who has got an idea and wants to make it a reality?
I mean, I think these days it's not about having a great app. It's about having a great business idea. Because the App Store is a limited storefront. So what I mean by that is that it's not like a website where there's unlimited space for things. In the App Store, usually the way of discovery is by the top 10, top 100 list type of mechanism, which means that you're competing with some very big companies for the top shelf space. Yeah. It's more like selling something in Maya or JB Hi-Fi. Mm-hmm. You have to somehow get that shelf space. And the advertising spend that these other companies are spending on it and app ideas, chances are they might be better than yours. Mm-hmm. So you really have to have a very strong idea, business idea, to back it up. Mm-hmm. I think we've moved out of the, if I build something fun and cool, you'll be successful era. You're really competing with big companies in terms of the strategy and the business goal behind it.
So it's not just if I build it, they'll come. it's more the idea that fuels the app rather than just the sake of having an app. So the idea is what's got to capture people's imagination, not just the fact of downloading a piece of software.
Yeah, I mean, it's a business. So it's the idea, it's implementation, it's a marketing behind it. You're building a business, you're no longer just building an app. That's the advice I would give people, to think about it more as a business. How are you going to sell it? How are you going to make money?
Sure. And where do you think, with the improvement of devices, that we're now carrying much larger mobile devices around, sort of phablet screens, you know, mobile smartphone screens are getting bigger, mm-hmm. tablets are still pretty popular. Yeah. Where do you think the market's going? Like, looking forward a few years, I suppose that's kind of your job here, is to sort of give people a forecast of what they can expect. Where do you think the market's going to go in relation to the devices? What changes do you expect?
I actually see that the trend that I see is, sure, the screens are getting bigger, but the technology is getting split up into smaller chunks that fits neatly into different niche aspects of our lives. So if you look at it, you know, the smartwatches, some virtual reality headsets, fitness trackers, they're all... Your mobile phone devices can do most of these things, but these devices are optimized for specific purpose, whether it's sports or gaming, virtual reality. Mm-hmm. And I see it as technology becoming more integrated into our lives. So devices, I kind of see, for example, you know, I'm working on a few home automation stuff lately, mm-hmm. with Sonos speakers and the Philips Hue lights. And you start to see that it's not so much about having computers around, it's about having these smart technology in little places, making little bits of improvements in people's lives.
You mentioned home automation. That's obviously going to be the Internet of Things, as we're calling it, is going to be pretty big in the years ahead. Mm-hmm. You also mentioned wearables too, the wearable space.
Yeah.
How does that figure in? Because apps, of course, can work with wearable devices. The Apple Watch is just around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to really give us a different kind of reach into those apps now, isn't it?
Yeah. I think apps... and mobile technology, what it does is it provides a portable screen space to all these technology. So right now, with all these devices, the app pretty much gives you like a mechanism to see what's happening with it. So if it's like a fitness band, for example, great, it can record stuff. It might even be able to show what's happening during the day. But when you want to analyze the data, on the go, then you still have to come back to your tablets and mobile phones. Mm-hmm. So I really see apps having playing a great part in working with the rest of the tech environment.
Tech Guide. Now, answering all your tech questions, the Tech Guide Help Desk.
Okay, our Tech Guide Help Desk is from a reader named Kate. Now, she got in touch with me. She said, "Hi there, Stephen. I'm a university student." And she says she's thinking of getting an iPad. She wants to use an app called Notability, which allows her to keep her lecture notes all together in one place, accessible anywhere because they're saved in the cloud. And she says she plans on using it to highlight and handwrite on PDFs and her lecture notes. But she wasn't quite sure whether the iPad is the right answer, is the solution. Well, yes, it is. The iPad, I think, is a great choice here for university students. It's affordable. You can buy a Bluetooth keyboard to give it the capability of a laptop. The iPad Air 2 has 64-bit processor, so it does have quite an amount of computing power. Plenty of apps that are designed for productivity, and in this case, Notability, which is what Kate's after, a great note-taking app as well. But there is, people say, well, no, there's not many styluses that allow you to write directly on the screen. Well, no, there is plenty of styluses. One company in particular called Adonit, that's Adonit, specialise in iPad stylus, styli, I don't know the plural for stylus, more than one stylus, styluses, I don't know what the word is there, but you know what I'm getting at. There are plenty of options here, whether you want to use it for drawing, writing, note-taking, various Adonit styluses that sync beautifully through Bluetooth with the iPad. The other choice, if she's more a Windows girl, she may want a more PC-like environment with Windows, then I would strongly recommend the Surface Pro 3, which does have, obviously, a touchscreen, has the power of a laptop, comes, you can buy accessories like the keyboards. I think it comes with a pen already, so you can write directly on the screen. So that solves her problem there as well. So they're the choices. I think she's leaning towards an iPad. She did say that in there. And she said that I'm the only person her dad will listen to about this stuff, and she'd love to hear my thoughts. She said her dad disagreed, thinks an iPad wouldn't do the job. Well, Dad, guess what? You're wrong. iPad will do the job. Glad that you're listening to my advice, but in this case, your daughter is spot on with the iPad recommendation there. Thank you for that email, Kate. I hope that answers your question. And anyone else who wants to contribute to the Tech Guide Help Desk can do so in a number of ways. We are now taking audio questions for the Tech Guide Help Desk using the VoiceByte app. VoiceByte, that's spelled Voice, B-Y-T-E is the byte. You can download it for free on iPhone and Android, so iOS and Android. You can record your question in 15 seconds, hashtag Tech Guide, so that I know which questions you're wanting to send me for the Tech Guide Help Desk. And what I'll do, I will play your question. So it's your voice you'll be hearing on the Tech Guide Help Desk, the next Tech Guide podcast, and I will then answer your question. So rather than writing an email, I want to hear your voice. Send me a voice bite. You can still email if you like, but preference will be given to voice bites that are sent in. Hashtag Tech Guide in the clip title. Download it now. It's free, iOS and Android. And that's the end of our show for this week. You can read everything we've talked about, of course, at techguide.com.au. And if you want to get in touch, email is info@techguide.com.au. Special thanks to our sponsors, Netgear. They're the brand you can trust for all your Wi-Fi needs. Staying connected, the answer is Netgear. Thanks for listening. Been great having you with us once again. We look forward to you joining us again next week. So until then, as we always say, stay safe and stay connected.